This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Debbie Elliott. Since the 1950s, field biologists have managed to stick radio tracking devices on all kinds of big animals. Whales, bears, elephants, you name it. What these scientists haven't done is track a lot of smaller creatures, like bugs and birds. Biologists known as microtrackers are now attempting to change that with tubes of superglue and transmitters the size of a baby's thumbnail. If the microtrackers have a leader, it's ecologist Martin Wichelski of Princeton University. NPR's John Nielsen went to see him recently, hoping to join a chase, and discovered things don't always turn out as expected.
Not too long ago, Martin Wichelski asked a friend to help him dig up every single published study of a migratory songbird. Sure, said the friend. That won't take long.
The best we have is a 1978 track of one single thrush from Champaign-Urbana to Winnipeg. That's all we know globally about individual songbird migration.
Wichelski's a wiry, dark-haired German who wears small, round glasses. At the moment, we're walking through the Princeton campus towards what he calls his tracking car, in which we will soon drive out to a meadow and attempt to tag a dragonfly. The story he's just told sums up a scary problem faced by everybody who tries to study small migrating animals, he says. The problem is that scientists know next to nothing about how these creatures get around.
That is a major, major research gap. I mean, it's important for conservation, it's important for our understanding of migration, diseases, avian flu, and we are still just about as ignorant as Aristotle 2,000 years ago.
The Greek philosopher Aristotle was the first to marvel at migration, but marveling is not the same as gathering the data points that show how little flying creatures move around from day to day, and perhaps where these creatures will be tomorrow. Wichelski's been gathering those data points for 8 years now, working out of what has got to be the weirdest looking car in all of Princeton, New Jersey.
Where'd you get this car? I gotta ask. It is a heap.
Yeah, it's an 8-cylinder, just a really whopping car.
We are looking at a pockmarked, boat-sized, late-model Oldsmobile with faded purple velour upholstery and what appears to be a giant TV antenna sticking up out of the center of the roof. Upright citizens of Princeton tend to stare and point when he drives by.
They really think you're geeks. You just have to get used to that.
Wichelski's life inside this car began in 1998, when he moved to Illinois to track tiny birds called thrush. Then, as now, he drove with one hand on the steering wheel and the other stretched behind him into the back seat so that he could twist at the base of the antenna. The flying things he chases in this car all have itty-bitty radio transmitters glued to their bellies or their backs. Some of these transmitters burp out sonic beeps that show location and direction. Others, like the beepers on the migratory thrush, do much more than that.
So we get from one single transmitter, we get heart rate, wing beat, and respiration.
Wichelski slowly swivels the antenna on his car until he hears the steady beeping loud and clear. That tells him where he needs to go.
And that's really critical because obviously, these animals are on the move, and we have to be on the move and calculate where we can intercept them because we want to get exactly their location at a specific time and also find out their heading, which we have to get.
Fun is not a word that fits this line of work, according to Wichelski. Those who think otherwise might try spending several years tracking thrush that only fly at night, during which time they often cover several hundred miles. These birds also disappear from time to time, straying far and wide from what's supposed to be their migratory pathway. Wichelski's early tracking work forced lots of ornithologists to change the way they think about migration. Proposals to track other birds are popping up like mushrooms now, but Wichelski has moved on. At Princeton University, he's been spending lots of time attaching transmitters to large flying insects, most of which are captured in a grassy meadow not far from his office. Dragonflies, cicada, swarming locusts, and enormous wasps are all on his to-do list. We park the car Wichelski's students call the Batmobile at the edge of the buggy meadow. We're met by David Wilkove, an ecologist at Princeton. Wilkove says it's hard to overstate the importance of this kind of work.
insects migrate around the world in immense numbers. And if you actually look at the weight or biomass, a swarm of locusts can weigh as much as wildebeest in the Serengeti. There's just a tremendous number of animals and a lot of living tissue on the move, with virtually nothing known about it.
Meanwhile, out in the meadow, other colleagues are crawling around on their hands and knees, trying to capture flying bugs that might be big enough to carry small radio transmitters around. Some bugs just can't handle it, which shouldn't be surprising, says Mike May of Rutgers University.
If you were trying to fly with, you know, a suitcase strapped to your belly, it would be tough.
While May is talking, Wachelski opens up a small wooden case and takes out one of his transmitters. It measures roughly half an inch and weighs less than a gram. To me, it looks like some kind of extremely high-tech fishing lure, but to Wachelski, it's a thing of beauty.
They're really powerful. We get a signal from this little guy. We get a signal about 8 miles surface to air.
Wachelski glued devices just like this one onto a group of dragonflies about a year ago. Then he chased the beepered bugs around for several months in a small plane. In the end, he was able to prove that dragonflies can cover 100 miles in the course of a single day and that they appear to migrate up and down the East Coast every year. Wachelski also noticed several striking similarities between the flight paths used by dragonflies and birds. This suggests that there might be universal rules that cover all forms of migration. Ecologist David Moskovitz wants badly to pursue that notion by attaching transmitters to an especially destructive kind of bug.
I'd love to put one on an Asian longhorn beetle, which is devastating trees in New Jersey and in New York, and figure out where they're going. If we can get some more specific information on where the adults are flying, maybe we don't have to cut all those trees down.
We'd planned to put a transmitter onto another dragonfly today. Perhaps the brown and white striped one buzzing at the bottom of Mike May's net. But then David Moskovitz captured an alternative, an enormous tiger swallowtail butterfly.
Whoa, all right. You think you're going to put a transmitter on that?
No one's ever tried to track a butterfly before. They're supposed to be too light to carry much of anything, let alone a radio transmitter. Wilkov adds that a low and labored flight could turn out to be a disaster, given the amount of traffic found on nearby roads.
That thing hits the grill of a car, you're going to get some major dispersal activity.
On the other hand, this is exactly how new fields of study get created. Wilkov says scientists are supposed to try to do things that have not been done before, and so in this case, they do.
Enough room to get in there with your hands.
Somebody holds the butterfly steady. Wachelski takes out an X-Acto knife. Carefully, he scrapes a bit of fuzz off the back of the insect.
Just try not to let it snap its wings.
Yeah.
Wachelski grabs a tube of superglue. Then he scowls and puts it down.
Yeah. I don't know if the glue is the right one. I mean, it's...
You're just using the eyelash?
Yeah, it's just the eyelash.
Why eyelash?
Why, it's gooey.
Gooey is a sophisticated scientific term.
Yeah.
Finally, very carefully, Wachelski glues the transmitter onto the butterfly. Everybody waits 2 minutes for the goo to dry. Then
launch away.
You're better.
Yeah,
you seem to do a good job.
You're the butterfly guy.
Yeah,
come on.
Yeah, you.
In the end, it's Wachelski who tosses the experimental swallowtail up into the wind. It flaps its wings. It flies. The scientists jump up and down like a bunch of kids.
It does seem to be going fine.
Nice. All right, it's rising.
Oh, it's rising. Right. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
But then it falls.
Oh, come on.
Do not hit.
No, wait.
All right.
After flying several hundred feet, this swallowtail crashed into a plant that knocked the beeper off its back. Before we could get out to it, the butterfly had flown off towards the far side of the meadow. Wachelski found the transmitter and cleaned it off. Nobody looked discouraged. John Nielsen, NPR News.